Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting. I'm going to go ahead and call it to order. So would you, Eric, make sure we have a quorum of commissioners?
Yes, yeah. Commissioner Clunan.
Present.
Commissioner Corgi.
Here.
Commissioner Crusoe.
I'm here.
Commissioner Don Carlos.
Here.
Commissioner Fitzgerald.
Here.
Commissioner Meese.
Here.
And I see Roger is here as well. So we have a quorum and we're ready to roll.
Okay, great. All right. So to start with, let me just go through my the chairman's remarks. So on our agenda, I'd like to just summarize a couple of items I'm going to hit today. Excuse me. The pilot board met this past week, and I'd like to kind of give the commissioners an update on that, on the pilot commission meeting, which I did attend and was a speaker at. So the under the legislation that was passed in 2019 surrounding relating to primarily 1,100 foot ships and transit in the channel, the pilots held a hearing, one of the first of two hearings required under the legislation, about bringing ships in over 1,100 feet, and that would be ships that are 1,120 feet. Under the legislation, it requires pilots to first vote and have at least an 80% vote of all the pilots that bringing larger ships in than 1,100 feet would continue to be safe and also continue to have efficient two-way traffic in the channel. And the pilots, my understanding, voted with a 96% majority to move forward with 1,120 foot vessels. They currently operate only 1,099 foot vessels. So the first the pilot board then met and had the first public hearing, which I said I spoke at, which I did. And we had a lot of industry folks speak at that as well, both on the from the container business and also from the oil and gas business. And I think there was a general consensus that as long as two-way traffic was continued to maintain in an efficient way, the way it is today, that that most folks had no problem with that. So I think the bottom line is it'll be interesting to see the next meetings coming up, I think, in a week or so. And then after that, assuming that we continue on this track, the pilots will be able to bring in 1,120 foot ships through the channel. I think this is significant in that, that it's good news that we can operate larger ships in Houston, because what's really happening is that the limitation on the size of ships in Houston is limiting the other ports in the Gulf as well. And so we've had conversations, I know Roger has, with his fellow executive directors and CEOs of the other ports, and if a ship does not call on Houston, it generally doesn't call on any other port in the Gulf. And so that this is good news not just for Houston, but also for all the Gulf, because the container business needs to have longer bigger ships. And we know there's lots of supply chain bottlenecks around the world, and we just need to eliminate as much friction from that bottleneck as we can. And this move actually will do that. And so we're really excited about that. And actually the pilots, Captain Thompson, I want to congratulate the pilots for and Captain Thompson for getting the experience that they need and needed to move to this to the longer and more dense ships. Captain Thompson, in his comments, talked about how the number of transits they had with 1099 ships, and the fact that they've become comfortable maneuvering the larger ships in, and think that now's the time for them to go to the 1120 level. So I think that's coming up in the next couple of weeks, and that should help solve some of these bottlenecks that we have today. I'd also like to ultimately the ultimate bottleneck is solved when Project 11 is complete, and I'd like to give you an update on on where we are with Project 11. We had a special port commission meeting last week, and we are working on the project partnership agreement, or what we call the PPA, with the Army Corps of Engineers to construct Project 11. At last week's meeting, the commission authorized entering into the PPA and doing what's necessary to take for it to take effect, based on the briefing that we had in an executive session. The port staff has recommended to the commission that we negotiate a PPA that could include all of the separate elements of the project, except for element 1C, the reach between the bay channel, between bay port and Barber's Cut. That means the PPA would include elements 1A and 1B in the bay up to the Bayport channel, elements 2, Barber Ship Channel, or Bayport Ship Channel, sorry, and then element 3, Barber's Cut Channel, element 4, which is the bio channel from Boggy Bayou to Sims Bayou, and element 5 and 6 from Sims Bayou to the main turning basin. For element 1C, we recommended that that we ask the the Assistant Secretary of the Army for approval under Section 204F agreement, which means that the Army Corps would assume the responsibility for maintenance of that section of the expanded channel. This would allow us to speed up the channel expansion to Bayport, which brings significant economic and safety benefits to all port users. In order to speed up those benefits, we would need to agree in the PPA that we will be responsible for the incremental cost of maintaining the widened channel for element 1B. We still believe it makes the most sense for the Corps to maintain the full expanded channel, but under this path forward, we would have to have a discussion with Congress. Right now, we have two main issues we're working on with the Corps as we finalize the PPA. First is to make sure it's clear that the port is responsible for only the incremental costs of constructing and maintaining element 1B. The Corps is proposing to split up costs in a way that would make us pay more than that. Second is how to deal with the maintenance dredging of the existing channel while we are out there widening it. The Corps is working with us to get their maintenance dredges working just ahead of our construction. In the places where they can't do that, it's more efficient for us to do the maintenance dredging for them during construction, but we need approval for us to get reimbursed for that work. We're working towards a PPA in July that will allow the Corps to start construction on their part of the project with the $19.5 million of federal funds that they have received for the fiscal year that ends in September. Excuse me. We are on a path that is fully consistent with the staff's recommendations and the commission's authorizations. Though it looks unlikely right now, we will come back to the commission quickly if it looks like there may be any material changes on that. The last item I'd like to just talk about quickly is the sustainability focus that the port has been moving forward. The port staff facilitated 3 sustainability action team workshops on June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, with about 50 participants representing port users, industry, environmental, and community advocates to gauge stakeholder priorities for sustainability in areas of environmental, social, and governance. This process starts with listening to our stakeholders and then identifying what else we can do beyond all of our ongoing activities to promote sustainability and where the port should lead or partner or support from the side. The port will recap these workshops back to participants this Thursday and ultimately will report out to the Port Commission in July. While we don't have the data and the inputs fully analyzed, and it does appear that there is some consensus for priorities around clean energy, air quality, community engagement, but more detail will be available next month. Meanwhile, the port continues to focus on sustainability. And since the last meeting, we have undertaken 2 new important initiatives. First, on June 1st, Port Houston joined the International Agency or International Energy Agency Clean Energy Ministry, that's a mouthful, in launching a global hydrogen ports coalition to advance global collaboration aimed at accelerating use of hydrogen in shipping ports. Yesterday, Port Houston joined Shell Oil, Kirby, and others in launching the Blue Sky Maritime Coalition. Port Houston is proud of to be a founding member of this coalition, whose members are targeting decarbonization and shipping through operational efficiency, policy, finance, and technology innovation. In addition, next month, on July 1st, Port staff will participate in the Future of Global Energy Conference, sponsored jointly by the Greater Houston Partnership and the Center for Houston Future, which is focused on the same things, same themes, including energy transition. At this point, I'd like to just finish my discussion by thanking all of our Port Houston employees for continuing to move cargo and to create great economic activity for our region. So at this point, I am finished with my comments. And so let's move on to item C, which is approval of our minutes from the Port Commission meeting on May 25th.
So moved. Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Are there any discussion or comments? Okay, hearing none, are there any negative votes on item C1? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Staff reports, Roger, you're up.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
May I make a comment before you go further?
Absolutely.
I also want to thank Robert Thompson and the pilots and Robert's team. I know they worked real, real hard to make that decision, and it will definitely bring more cargo into Houston, and I just appreciate the effort that they put into it.
Absolutely agreed.
Okay. And I second that. Commissioners?
Okay, Commissioner Corgi, you seconded. All right. Anyone else?
They're keeping us busy, Rick.
Well, you know, isn't that the point?
Yep.
Cargo means jobs.
Yes, sir.
People need their stuff.
Roger on that.
Any other comments, commissioners?
Yeah, it means revenue, too.
Absolutely. You know, you always have somebody's revenue is somebody else's expense. We know that. And all those expenses go to jobs. Got to have revenue. You have no jobs. Roger, I think you're up.
Yes. Good morning. Thanks, Chairman and Commissioners. Hope everybody's doing well. You know, the first thing I want to do today is to highlight the achievements of a few of our employees who recently retired and some that have reached milestone anniversaries of 20 years or more. I think it's pretty neat. You've been watching some of the photos of these members of the Port family scrolling on the screen. It's always better to do this in person, but you know, hey, we're at least we're able to show some faces and recognize them virtually today. And it's just a special recognition to all of these folks who have received these milestones or achieved these milestones through their service to the organization, and some that are moving on into retirement. I just want to highlight a few of the extra long tenures that we've had with the port. They're all important, but on the retiree side, we've had a few that retired recently with 25 years of service. Jerry Matheson, Diana Robbins, Rick Murray, and Carol Niedert, who all worked at the container terminals. Eric LeBeau had 26 years with the port and left us recently. We have Ed Fouts with 28 years. Rudy Lechuga with 34 years, and top in the list in terms of service in retirement is Randall Pugh, who served at the port for 39 years. So we wish all of them well and all the others who've recently retired as they move on to a life beyond the port. Also, I think it's important to recognize those that are still working for us. You've seen on the screen the many, many people that have achieved 20 years or more. But some I want to especially recognize who have reached that 30-year mark. A couple of guys from our maintenance department, Robin Nutt and Doug Johnson with 30 years. Jack Hines from our police force with 30 years. Fonda Jenyak in human resources, as well as Paula Driscoll, who's executive assistant to the CFO, to Tim down there with 30 years. But a special milestone that has been achieved is Kathy Swift, who is our customer billing service analyst, who has been working at the port for 40 years. So special recognition to Kathy and to all of those who have served us well at the port. You know, thank you all. Thanks for your service and making this organization successful for many, many years. It takes the people of this organization to make this great. And I thank you all as we recognize you today. Just a few business highlights. The cargo tonnage continues to soar at our facilities with another month of double-digit growth in our container cargo. We had our best May ever for container TEUs. The activity in May showed a 30% increase compared to last year of the same month. Again, May of last year was down, but you know, overall, it's been a great year. Year to date, Port Houston terminals, container terminals are up 8% over last year already, with a total of over 1.3 million TEUs so far. And I might add, even, you know, comparing to last year, which was a down year at this point, we're up 9% from a previous record year in 2019 year to date. So container cargo is strong. General cargo is favorable as well. It's up 12% year to date at our multi-purpose facilities. We're still showing some signs of recovery as well, with a 30% increase over May of last year, along with other increases with general cargo commodity. I've seen, looking out my window, seeing a lot of lumber on the dock, and some of those commodities that have been coming break bulk. The total tonnage across all facilities for the year is up 1% and continues to grow. Just to kind of looking at a glimpse of June, you know, June's looking extremely strong as well, with no signs of this activity slowing down anytime soon. It just seems like every day, every week, we're setting a new record somewhere. Barber's Cut had a record gate move day just last week with nearly 5,000 transactions. That's being driven too by a new service that started just last week, or a little over a week ago, with the O&E service and a new Asian service. So it was driving more volume through Barber's Cut. Bayport also had a record day back in early June of 8,600 transactions. So we're commonly seeing now, you know, 11,000 gate transactions between the two container terminals every day, which is well above the average that we've been seeing for, you know, the past year. Other records, I think we mentioned last month, in late May, we had the largest single vessel lift record at Bayport, with CMA over almost 6,100 lifts on the Asian service there. And then the first ship that called for this new service with the Alliance, the O&E service, just last week, the O&E Modern had more than 5,500 vessel lifts on that first call of that new service. So ships are, the demand's still here, the demand is growing, ships are getting bigger. And, you know, the good thing is, We're able to efficiently handle those by, you know, a great labor force, a great operational force, truckers, stevedores, and everybody to maintain efficient service levels while this is happening. And lastly, you know, just looking at steel imports as well, I just saw the report for June. It looks like month to date, it's going to be a strong month, and we're going to get nearly 300,000 tons for the month, which is, you know, getting back to a level that's average or above average. So we hope that continues. The last thing I want to mention is just kind of where we are is on business equity. As we indicated earlier in the year, cross-functional team led by Gilda Ramirez and her group has been working very hard preparing for the launch of our business equity procurement initiative in just a few weeks. While the staff finalizes the information regarding the availability of these small and minority women-owned businesses to participate in our contracts, the team representing each of our divisions is engaged in drilling down into each of the upcoming projects that are going to happen in the second half of the year for those opportunities to expand our utilization of small and women-owned business enterprises. So our plan is we'll keep the commission updated. We'll do it at the Business Equity Committee later this week of those projects, as well as the full commission in July, which we intend to target for some of these MWBE goal setting measures. So we're beginning. You know, we announced that we're going to launch this thing in July. So we're going to we're starting this thing and looking forward to you know, successful implementation as we move forward with this program. So anyway, that's all I have. And if there's any questions, feel free. Otherwise, I'll turn it back to you, Chairman.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Roger, you know, I know that you've been working on a program to on our bidding program. When a person bids a $200,000 job, they have to go through the same requirements that you do if you bid a $20 million job. And they almost force them to have to hire an accountant to keep up with it. And I've been told that we've been working on, and we're going to continue to work on, kind of getting a different bidding procedure for these smaller contracts. And that's something we should work on every day until we get it done so it's fair to the people that are bidding the smaller jobs. It's not fair to hold in with the same thing you're holding a contractor on a $20 million job. And our requirements are quite extensive, as you well know. And when you're putting a fence up, there's not any reason to have to hire an accountant to keep up with our requirements on a $100,000 fence job. And there's a great difference, and we need to get that straightened down. I think it would help a lot of these smaller businesses bid Houston's jobs. That's all I got to say about it. I understand.
No, thank you for that. I think it's a fair point. I think it's important that we make the process for doing business with the port as easy as possible. I know there's certain statutory requirements that we have to do, but you know, there's certain you know, whatever we do, we want to make it easy, but we also want to make it, you know, certainly fair and a transparent process. So we'll continue to look at the best way to do that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, let me just make a quick comment on that, too, because, you know, having already been involved in a lot of these kind of business equity projects over the years, or, you know, when you start, when a new entity starts like the port, who has not had this kind of program before, we've had a very obviously robust small business initiative that's I think we're nearly $600 million of awards to small businesses. And clearly we over the years that program has been improved and streamlined, and because you obviously don't have a lot of hurdles to get over for small businesses given the $600 million that we've already contracted with these small businesses. And I think the same thing will happen with our business equity program. And that is, we'll have to tweak our programs or our procurement mechanisms to try to promote the business equity program. And we may have to do things we haven't done in the past, including breaking contracts into smaller contracts, partnering people together, outreach into the community, because a lot of the challenge that you have, I think, in this business equity area is the people just don't know that they can go do business with a port today. They may not even have a clue on what we do. And so a lot of it has to do with educating the population out there that has the ability to work with a port. And so this is going to be a journey, not a destination. And I would just make sure that commissioners understand that even though we're launching July 1, it's not going to happen immediately in July because we have to broaden the scope and educate people and get to your point, Commissioner Meese, make sure our contracting process is user-friendly for this group while maintaining the highest quality and the highest integrity of the process, because we have to make sure that that it is a fair and level playing field, and we comply with all the, you know, the rules and regulations that are required of the port to comply with. So it's more to come, obviously, as Roger pointed out. I think we have a great start, and we have a great team that's already shown that they with Gilda and her team, that have shown that they can implement a program that makes sense and creates value for both for the port and for the community.
Roger, Mr. Chair, this is Steve. I ran across an article the other day that indicated that the automobile shortage is somewhat due to the congestion on the West Coast. And what it, I guess my question is, do we give any aid or assistance in recruiting importers to bring those, you know, to expand the automobile import business? I know it's somewhat limited right now to several different brands, but I'm wondering if there's some opportunities there for us to expand that business.
Well, I think it's a multitude of things, Commissioner. You know, the part of what we're seeing in the disruption in the supply chain has to do with some of the electronic chips and things that are used in the manufacture of cars, maybe not the cars themselves, but it's also, you know, for appliances and things like that. I mean, cars are imported across the country, you know, at several, both the East and West and Gulf ports are well as well. But, you know, in any opportunities that, you know, we have, we continue to look to you know, provide more efficient import opportunities, export opportunities for automobiles as well. But there's a lot of things going on the supply chain and as well as on the origin side of things. Some of the ports in Asia right now are experiencing some issues with shortages and manpower related to COVID. And, you know, although the West Coast may be clearing up a little bit now, as far as some of their vessels waiting outside, they're stacking up at some of the Asian ports, you know, getting ships in on the origin and supply side of things that are imported here. So it's a huge disruption in the supply chain. However, you know, we've seen a tremendous growth of that. And what I was saying earlier, you know, our growth, we don't have any ships waiting outside. We still have very efficient, you know, service levels to our customers. We don't have issues with labor, although it's in demand, and the labor is keeping up with to make sure that we have that supply of labor to make sure ourselves are efficient. But, you know, the other thing to that, just rambling a little bit more, is, you know, it's going to be healthy when we get the ability to handle bigger ships, because we've missed out on some opportunities of cargo that wanted to divert, but our channel is not in a position to handle those ships yet. So great news with what the pilots are done, and great news, I think, with expediting the things that we're doing with the channel to keep us in a good position.
Any other questions, commissioners? Okay, thank you, Roger. Let's move on to then appearances. I believe, Eric, I haven't seen any other emails from you. So we have one speaker today, Adrian Shelley, from who's the Director of Public Citizen in Texas. I see you there, Eric. Or I'm sorry, Adrian, go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for having me today. Appreciate the opportunity, as always, to speak. I just wanted to follow up very quickly on an item from last month, May. My colleague Christina Zatopek with East Harris County Empowerment Council commented on the proposal to grant a pipeline license application to Intercontinental Terminals Company, ITC. This is the company that had the March 2019 fire and subsequent pollution event there on the ship channel. I wasn't able to attend that meeting last month, but my understanding is that the response to the comment that the commission should consider rejecting the pipeline license application due to ITC's poor performance in the recent past was that this wasn't the time for the commission to revise its policy regarding pipeline license applications. So we took a look at the policy and, you know, we don't think that it needs to be revised. We think that the present policy gives, ample authority for the court to review license applications and approve them or deny them, as it sees fit. And if I could just quickly quote, from the qualifications for pipeline licenses document dated 2017, it says, quote, legally responsible operators are those who regularly comply with and who have no history of violation of material federal and state statutes. Goes on, demonstrate their commitment to safe and efficient ownership or operation of pipelines, possess the skill, experience, equipment, personnel necessary to do so. And it concludes the Port Commission may deny, revoke, or decline to renew pipeline license application if it does not meet all these requirements. So the authority's there, right? And I just want to remind you all of kind of the present set of circumstances with that company, ITC, since that March 2019 fire. They are at the federal level, they're classed as high priority violators by the EPA. They have been every quarter since April of 2020. There were violations of the Clean Air Act and RCRA against them last year. There were two state level final judgments against them last year. These are TCQ case numbers 60337, that's a water quality high level emergency response, and TCQ case number 59536. That's a high-level air quality response. They were criminally charged by Harris County. There was eventually a $900,000 settlement. That was in April of this year. Most of the county's claims were preempted by a state case, which is still pending. So this is a company with significant ongoing violations at the state and federal level. They've demonstrated themselves to not be a good actor. The court clearly has the authority in cases like this to, very carefully consider an application, whether it's in the public interest and the best interest of health and safety in the community to approve a license like that. So we just want to encourage you to do that. Use the authority that you already have. Thank you.
Mr. Shelley, thanks. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, I appreciate that that discussion. And, your point is well taken. And as part of our discussion in the sustainability action team workshops, we talk really specifically about what can the port do as a leader, as a partner, and as sort of a cheerleader from the sidelines, helping support sustainability issues in the port. And I think that your point is definitely well taken. Heretofore, the port has not necessarily used its authority to push those kinds of issues. And I think as part of our review and part of our partnering with groups like yours, Mr. Shelley, it's something we need to consider for sure. And I think that at the end of the day, that there's the carrot and the stick, right? And you have to have the carrot part of the equation and the stick part of the equation. And to the extent that the port has the ability to use both, hopefully the carrot is used more, and if the carrot doesn't work, the stick comes into play. And so I just think it's one of those types of issues that we need to spend more time on and understand and be consistent with the application of that authority. And you can rest assured that it will be a discussion point with the port going forward.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, any other comments or questions? Roger, you look like you might want to say something.
Well, I just want to thank Adrian, just for clarification, this easement was, our license was a methanol pipeline that was crossing a PTRA easement or whatever. And the question last time was indicating that maybe we should punish someone or whatever. In our license review, you know, there's certainly considerations of all other authorities out there, like the EPA and the TCEQ and the Coast Guard, or so we're not, you know, indifferent about, you know, the review that we do in granting these licenses. But you know, it was a pipeline that was crossing one of one of the Port Terminal Railroad Association easements. So anyway, I appreciate your comments.
Thank you,
Eric. Do we have any other speakers that I don't know of?
Not to my knowledge. No one has signed up.
Mr. Okay, Chairman, I'd like to ask Roger one question, please, sir.
Sure, go ahead.
Hey, Rog, how are we going with our rail project? The rail service out of Barber's Cut.
Well, we have, we have engaged with the organization to market that. I can just say that, it's a marketing opportunity and also someone with the expertise to drive some more, business through our port, on rail, off roads, still working on some things, Commissioner, nothing tangible yet, but we think those opportunities are certainly out there to, get some more volume off the road, new volume on rail, going, not just to serve, the Texas region, but further into the hinterland. So we're still continuing to market that and speak with those guys. So I think there's some opportunities that will come to fruition.
Good. Thank you.
Roger, he may have been referring to the Bayport rail project. We haven't heard an update on that in a very long time about the right of way and such as that.
So if that's what you were talking about, Commissioner,
I was talking about Barber's Cut.
Yeah, but that's good. And also, Commissioner Don Carlos, I can get Tom or Rich or somebody to give you an update on that. But yes, I mean, we've got a rail facility that is, let's just say, highly underutilized at Barber's Cut, that we think there's some more opportunities to utilize that and, twofold, increase cargo coming through our port, as well as, giving alternatives for taking some trucks off the road. So anyway, Tom or Rich, somebody want to update on the rail into Bayport?
Rich, why don't you give them an update?
Yeah. As you know, there's two big aspects of rail at Bayport. One is the rail spur project, and we terminated the contractor last year, and we are about to reinitiate that project. We had to do some redesign with our engineer record and put that package back out in the street, which is happening, I believe, this month for award in around September or October. And we expect to have that project finished first quarter of next year. The other aspect, I think when Commissioner Don Carlos mentioned right away, there has been on the long-term plan a second main line coming down to Bayport. That's a longer-term project. I'm not sure if you were asking about that one or the rail spur.
Both, actually. I know that we were in the midst of working on the right-of-way for the long-term project. Seems like several years ago, and we just hadn't gotten any update on how we're doing on that.
Our real estate division has identified the properties that need to be acquired, and I think they might be able to have a little bit more information on that process. But if you have any more specific questions, we can address them either offline or.
Yeah, that would be fine. Our executives, this would fit under an executive session in the future. I would be interested in an update.
Okay.
We will get you an update in July.
Okay. Any other questions, commissioners, before we get into the meat of the agenda? Okay. So let's move on to executive. Tom, you going to take us through these?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. F1 and F2. F1 is to Cassidy and Associates, and F2 is to Pendulum Strategies. These are our federal governmental policy consulting and support groups that we use. They've been doing a lot of work for us on P11 in the last year, and that will continue as we move forward with that process. Another item in executive is F3. We're asking the commission to approve the Community Relations Committee, which is a committee of the whole, to be able to review staff recommendations and approve awards under the community grant program. This is allowable under our bylaws, and there is a Community Relations Committee right after this that will be getting the 2021 grants approved. Therefore, I ask the commission to approve items F1 through F4.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions, commissioners?
I have a question on the grant program or a comment.
Yep.
I'm real proud of the fact that for the first time, we're actually going to give Houston 151.5 of the grants, and we're going to give the rest of the cities 148.750. That's closest I've ever seen it. So maybe we're making effort to understand that 90% of this channel is somewhere else besides Houston, Texas, and we need to look at these other cities. I'm proud of the one that we did in Baytown, and at least we're reaching out LRD. My goodness, right next to all the traffic, we recognize them for a change. So I don't know if it's because the smaller communities do not know how to go to the bag and get the money or make the applications. So maybe we need to educate those folks on these programs. But that's the only comment I've got. But I'm proud that we at least got close to a fairness in my mind.
Well, I think you have a lot to do with that, Roy.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I do think our team is really doing a great job with outreach to those cities as well, because you're exactly right. If they don't know, you know, that the money's available or how to get it, then they're not going to go get it, right? And that's one of the biggest challenges you have in programs like this, is making sure that the people who are in need of the funds know that they're available and how to go get them. So thank you, Commissioner Meese, for pushing that issue, and also thank you to the team that is out there, you know, beating the bushes looking for ways to give money away to the right people. Okay.
Our job, huh?
Yep.
Indeed.
Okay. So, any other questions? Any other questions? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call any negative votes. Hearing none, items F1 through 4 pass. Commercial, Tom?
Yes, under commercial, an item is to approve a lease agreement with Texas Lehigh Cement Company in our Turning Basin area. They are going to construct an electrical substation for their facility, which is right next door to our property. I ask the commission to approve items G1 through G4.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions, commissioners? Go ahead.
Yes, I had a question. Tom, did we ever find out whether or not this G1 was going to start immediately or 24 months after the operations began?
Yeah, this is written as the final amount to be collected, which is the $1,750 per month. But during the first 12 months, it's under a feasibility time period, which they pay $437 per acre per month. And then for the next year, during the construction, they pay $875 per acre per month. And so the full amount starts after the construction, which is the 24 months that you see in the item.
Thank you.
Any other questions, commissioners? Okay. Hearing none, are there any negative votes for G1 through G4? Hearing none, the motions pass. There's nothing in finance, so let's move to infrastructure.
Yes, under under infrastructure I-1, we are asking for the approval for a construction contract to Jerdon Enterprise for Ramp Road 8 gatehouse. This is a gatehouse that needs to be updated in terms of there's no restroom in it. The guards have to walk in front of the trucks to go check the documentation. So it's very dangerous from that standpoint. So we are going to rebuild it and make it safer and more of a facility to use 24/7. This is one of two man gates down to the lower level in the Turney Basin. I-2 is to authorize a lease with 2+ of Texas. They do business as a Star, which we've all heard of. This is to lease vans under the HGAC Metro Van Program. Prior to COVID, we had 6 different vans going to facilities at the port for our employees. Obviously, with COVID and the executive building being shut down, it had dropped to 1 van. We are asking for the authority for all 6 if we get them back in the next year. What happens is the port pays a fee to lease these per month. The employees themselves then pay for the gas and any tolls if they go through a toll road, and they each pay us a small fee towards the lease amount. It's a positive environmental program for us. We're very proud when we had 6. We're hoping to get back there at some point in the near future. I ask the commission to approve items I-1 through I-12.
And I'm going to abstain on 11, I-11.
Thank you. Okay. Is there a motion?
Motion.
And a second?
I'll second.
Okay. So a motion and a second. Is there any questions or comments besides Commissioner from abstaining on the center point?
I'd just like to say I really like the van program. I'm glad we're putting that back in operation. I think that's a great way to provide some convenience for the employees as well as reduce admissions around the port region. So I'm glad to see this is back on the table. Thanks.
Okay, so any other comments? Okay, hearing none, are there any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, items I-1 through 12 pass, and noted that Commissioner Montoya Clunan does abstain from 11, right? Thank you. Okay, next, Jay.
Under operations, the first one is to award a contract to ZPMC for the purchase of 3 dockside electric container cranes for Wharf 6 at Bayport. We are beginning the process to build Wharf 6. There's a 18 to 20 month building process for these cranes, so we have to start this early in the process. Also under
operation. Can I have a question, please, Tom?
Yep. Go ahead.
Don't we have 3 new cranes coming in September or October?
Yeah, they'll be here in October. Those are for Wharf 4 and 5, the ones where we're going to put the new ones, and then we're shipping the smaller original cranes to Barber's Cut.
Okay.
So that, but those 3 are for. These are for Dock 6,
right,
which is just currently starting the construction process.
Okay, but my question, I just want to make sure that the 3 we've already got is still projected to come in October.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Yes, sir. Okay.
Hey, Tom, while you're talking about this issue, let's talk a broader, like you and I did during the briefing, about what we have committed to on Wharf number 6 and what the total cost of expanding these 3 these 3 cranes and the expansion of the yard and all the other requisite things that we've done. So the port, this would be the last piece of that project, correct?
For Wharf 6, correct.
If you look at it, if you look at a wharf, it doesn't do us much good to build a wharf if we don't build a yard behind it. It doesn't do us much good to build the wharf or the yard if we don't buy the equipment to run it. And so when you look at one of these total terminals, if you will, it's about a $200 million investment. So the wharf has already been, like I said, it's starting soon. It's already been approved. This is the wharf that we got a $20 million federal grant for. The yard itself is already complete. That was something we needed, the laydown space, much earlier than we needed the actual wharf. So that's already complete. And so this will be the RTGs have already been purchased. So this is the final piece, if you will, of building out six in terms of all of the pieces, not just one.
And you've spent around $45 million so far on this, so we have another $155 million to go, including this $36 million, right?
Yeah, if you look at that, we've built the terminal, and it's about a $50 million, the yard itself, and we've gotten the container crane. So that's the dollars that we have spent. We have approved the wharf, which was in an $80 million range. And then you have this that is $36 million.
Right. And I believe when you first brought this to the commission, the first piece of it, which was the yard, I think, there was an analysis done on capacity and the need to expand capacity and the return on the total investment that ultimately was going to be made to expand Wharf 6, correct?
That's correct. And we didn't need the actual wharf as soon as we needed the yard. Now we're at the point where we need the wharf as well.
Right. And commissioners, I just want to point that out because when you start, you know, the fuse on a $200 million project, it's hard to turn back, right? And so I remember this conversation. I know that several commissioners weren't at these meetings because they weren't pointed at that time. And since this was probably the largest sort of single project, when you stack all the costs together, and in light of the deepening and widening project and the need for capital for that, plus the commitments that we made on other things, it was really important, I think, to the commission at the time to understand the importance of expanding Wharf 6 and understand the return on investment that we were going to get from that. And the commission approved that based on those reports that Roger and his team provided to the commission at the time. So this last $36 million is on top of you know, roughly $170 million that's already been approved by the port, and less the $20 million federal grant we got as well. So I want to make sure that everybody understands that this is the last piece of a $200 million project. Okay, Tom, go ahead.
Rick, just to add real quickly too, you know, and, you know, the acceleration of the investments, staying ahead of the demand curve. You mentioned the length, the fuse of this. It takes a few years to plan and build this type of facility. You have to have this ready in advance of the demand, which we know is coming quite rapidly. So, you know, it's very important to make sure that we have the capacity that when our carriers want to increase the volume, which they are doing at a very rapid pace, that we're prepared to handle that efficiently. So it's been a nice job by the team planning for this incrementally and implementing and being ready for what's to come.
Great. Okay, Tom, unless there are other comments from commissioners or questions. Okay, Tom, go ahead.
Item J3 is to award a contract to North Line for the purchase of new and repaired electronic components for our wharf and RTG cranes. These are the circuit boards that control the motor drives on all of our cranes. It's very important that we have a contract like this because the turnaround of a repair for a crane is very important to the timing of our operations. We cannot have long delays waiting on parts. J4 is a 2-year contract to Lockridge Packaging for the purchase of all the paper products for the port locations throughout the port. J5 is for the purchase of 4 replacement operator cabs for our wharf cranes at Barber's Cut for 4 of them, obviously, from Breda Cabins. These are done throughout time. 2 of these that we're replacing are 23 years old. So, you know, the design and the ergonomics of these new cabs that we put in other cranes has been very well accepted by the ILA operators, because they're designed to be more of a fingertip joystick type operations compared to what it was 23 years ago. Finally, items J8 and J9 are to ratify some emergency purchase orders that the commission was informed about earlier. One is for gate interchange tickets, and the other is for the repair of a main hoist gear reducer for a crane at Barber's Cut. These have been done as our state statutes allows us to do, and we are just ratifying what you have already been informed about. So I ask the commission to approve items J1 through J11.
Motion.
And any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, are there any negative votes for J1 through J11? Hearing none, motions pass. Okay, you have no people, no security or technology, so I guess we're going to then move to executive session. So Eric, do you want to read the
Certainly.
Go ahead.
It's now 10:12 a.m. The Port Commission of the Port Eastern Authority of Harris County, Texas will now convene and close. Meetings permitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code. Conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultation regarding proposed amendments to the agreement for legal services with Andrew Myers and Boyer Miller. Deliberate regarding real estate, including deliberations regarding disposition of attorney-based internal vicinity property and licensing of miscellaneous Houston Ship Channel and Upland properties. Economic development negotiations or incentives. Employment evaluation of public employees and security-related matters. The Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Okay. Thanks, Eric. Commissioners, you know what to do. You leave this meeting and join the other executive meeting, and then we'll come back to this meeting after executive session. So see you there.
We probably have a quorum. I think we're still waiting for a few people. But,
okay.
Obviously, you're back. Commissioner Clunan?
Here.
Commissioner Corgi, I think we're still waiting for. Okay. Commissioner Cruzo?
I'm here.
Commissioner Don Carlos?
Here.
Commissioner Fitzgerald?
Here.
Commissioner Meese.
Here.
Okay, so I think we were still waiting for Commissioner Corgi. But I guess we could go ahead.
Let's go ahead, Eric.
Okay. I'd like to ask if one of the commissioners would mind bringing a motion regarding a real estate matter.
I will bring the motion. If you read it, Eric.
I will be happy to do that.
I'll move it.
Okay, so Commissioner Fitzgerald moves to authorize the Port Authority to continue the monthly acreage lease rate reduction for certain month-to-month turning basin terminal leases for the time period on the other terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any questions or comments, commissioners? I see Commissioner Corgi has joined. Okay, are there any negative votes to the motion? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Eric, we have another one.
Yes, I'd ask a commissioner to support or move a motion regarding legal expense.
I'll move.
Second.
You'll read it.
Okay, then the commission has moved to authorize the Port Authority to amend the agreement for legal services with Andrew Myers, PC, and Boyer Miller on the terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the chief legal officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, are there any negative votes? Okay, the motion passes. We are now, I guess we're going to do our code of ethics training and review. Eric, is that correct?
That's correct. And let me introduce my colleague, Dave McNamara, who will be bringing that, who will be doing that training for you now.
Okay, great. Hey, Dave, it's your floor.
Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes. And are you able to see the PowerPoint?
Yes. Sir.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to try to keep this as painless as a long list of don't do's can be. So this is the annual training for our commissioners with respect to the Code of Ethics. We have some staff listening in. The slides are really directed at the commissioners, but I will try to clarify for staff, you know, which of these rules also apply to our staff. So as a general overview, this presentation is intended to provide a general overview of the Code of Ethics. There's a whole lot of detail in the Code of Ethics that we're not going to get into in this presentation. So if you've got any questions about it, please feel free to reach out to myself or to Eric. As a reminder, you know, this code is meant to set forth the minimum requirements for behavior for both our commissioners and our employees. But obviously, you know, we're in a lot of instances expecting employees and commissioners to go beyond what's stated in these this code of ethics and in this presentation. So it's a statement of purpose. The Port Authority is committed to lawful and ethical behavior in all of its activities. Commissioners and employees are expected to place the public interest above any private interest. They're expected to strive to instill confidence in the integrity and to gain public trust and act in accordance with all applicable laws, regulations, and policies. Okay, so this is the big picture outline of what's set forth in the Code of Ethics and what we're going to go over today. Obviously, everyone's expected to obey all applicable laws. We want you to avoid any sort of conflicts of interest or anything that could create the appearance of a conflict of interest between your personal interests and the interests of the Port Authority. We want to make sure that you're not trying to use your position in any way that creates an appearance that you're trying to use your position to gain a personal benefit. And so we're going to be talking about gifts that are and are not acceptable to receive. We're going to talk about the use of Port Authority property and information. And we're going to talk about some prohibitions on nepotism. And then we're going to talk a little bit about some restrictions on communications once you are no longer a commissioner. And then we'll very quickly talk about our non-discrimination, non-harassment, and retaliation policies. So the first big topic is avoiding conflicts of interest. This is pretty straightforward. Obviously, we don't want you to be doing anything that's going to create a perception that there is a conflict of interest between some sort of substantial outside interest you have and some activity that the Port Authority is engaged in. So a conflict of interest exists if the Port Authority is getting ready to take some sort of action that might have a special effect on you, a close relative, or a business or a real property interest that you have. And when we're talking about a special effect, obviously we're talking about when the Port Authority is taking some sort of specific action, say leasing a piece of property to a company or giving a contract to a piece of property that might impact you or a relative, as opposed to just a general interest that you might have as a resident of this region or someone who buys products that come through the Port Authority. So in terms of avoiding conflicts of interest, we want you to be on the lookout if the port looks like it's going to do business with something or someone with whom you've got an outside interest. We want to make sure that you disclose that and don't participate in whatever action or decision is being made that implicates that outside interest that you have. In particular, the government code has a specific requirement that this is for just the commissioners and the executive director. If you have received taxable income in excess of $2,500 or receive gifts that have an aggregate value of more than $100 in a 12-month period leading up to a point in time when the Port Authority either contracts with or is thinking about contracting with someone, and you've received one of those things from that person or entity, you need to file a disclosure with Eric. Also, if the Port Authority is getting ready to enter into a contract or thinking about contracting with someone with whom you have a family relationship, you need to be sure to disclose that. Some other laws with respect to conflicts of interest. Port employees and commissioners are not supposed to earn commissions or fees on any Port Authority projects. You're not supposed to act as a surety on any projects or bonds. We don't want you to make any investments that could create a substantial conflict between your private interest and the public interest. And we also if you act as a lobbyist on behalf of a profession related to the operation of the Port Authority, you're not allowed to remain a port commissioner or employee. This next slide actually comes from the special district code. And to be honest, I'm not sure exactly what this might apply to anymore, but commissioners can't be and aren't supposed to be married to an officer, employee, or if you're married to someone, they can't be a manager of a Texas Trade Association that is in a field relating to maritime commerce and whose members are regulated by the Port Authority. I think when this went into effect, the legislature may have had the Houston Pilots in mind. As it stands right now, there's not any trade organizations that jump out that this would apply to, but if you have any questions or think this might be coming into a play, please reach out to us. If a government entity is acquiring your property, and this applies to both employees and to port commissioners, so not just the Port Authority, but if any government entity is going to acquire your property, you need to file an affidavit with the clerk of the county in which you reside and all of the counties in which the property is located. So that doesn't necessarily involve port commission action. It's just something for you to be aware of. If your property is going to be taken by condemnation or sale by a government entity, you need to make this disclosure. Okay. So pivoting from regular conflicts of interest to issues of abuse of public office. And here we're just talking about you're not supposed to be using your position with the Port Authority for any sort of personal financial gain. You're not supposed to attempt to influence government decisions for your personal gain or otherwise bring discredit upon the Port Authority. So I'm going to talk a little bit about benefits that you can and cannot receive in your position as a port commissioner, as an employee. So this applies to commissioners and employees. There's an absolute prohibition. You are never, ever supposed to solicit or accept any benefit in exchange for any decision you're making on behalf of the Port Authority or any violation of a duty imposed by law relating to your duties as the Port Authority. So that's absolute. You know, don't accept any sort of bribe in exchange for a decision you're making on behalf of the port. Okay, this is where things get a little bit more complicated. I'm going to start by saying, you know, there's a general prohibition on benefits from any parties who are or might become interested in Port Authority actions. And this could include parties that are doing business with the port, subject to our regulation, those that we might be involved in a lawsuit in, someone in port police custody, someone trying to lobby the port. So the general rule is you're not supposed to accept benefits from any of those, but it doesn't take long to think about some obvious exceptions that need to be put in place where you can accept benefits for those folks. So some of those exceptions are if a benefit's prescribed by law or if you pay a legitimate price for something, obviously it's okay for you to take it. You need to obviously be aware of situations when someone might be giving you a favorable discount as a result of your position with the Port Authority. But generally speaking, if you pay a fair price for something, you're allowed to accept the benefit in return. If you have a relationship with someone independent of your role with the Port Authority, could be a family member, could be a friend, could be an outside business relationship, you know, it's then okay for you to accept benefits from those folks as long as the benefits being given as a result of that outside relationship as opposed to your relationship with the Port Authority. Political contributions are okay in accordance with Title 15 of the Elections Code. And then benefits of less than $50, as long as the benefits is not in the form of cash or like a gift card. For the employees who are listening in on this, there are some further restrictions with respect to this last bullet that apply to employees, further restrictions that we'll go over with those employees about when they can and cannot accept benefits less than $50.
Can you expand on Title 15? Is that just normal election law?
Yes.
So it's not some specialized port deal. It excludes certain things. It's just whatever Title 15 of the Election Code says, you're compliant with that.
Right. Right.
Okay. Can you send that out to port commissioners, please?
Title 15?
Yes.
Yes, will do.
Thank you.
Also, you're able to accept certain benefits from other government entities, access to facilities or property that's provided to residents, for example. And then certain food, lodging, transportation, or other entertainment that may be provided by someone in connection with your responsibilities with the Port Authority, as long as that's disclosed in writing to the chief legal officer in accordance with Chapter 572. As I think you're all aware, what was that?
Nothing.
Okay. Commissioners are required to file annual financial statements in accordance with.
Yeah. And let me just add that deadline is fast coming up the end of June. It was extended this year automatically by the Ethics Commission, but that is end of the month. So if you've not done it, please go ahead and take a look at that.
And there's no extension available for after the end of the month this time.
That's correct. That was already extended because of the IRS extension of the filing date. And so it was an automatic extension, but, you know, we basically have 8 days left.
Okay. Please remind the ones who hasn't sent them a little text or email. I don't remember if I did it or not.
I'll be happy to forward some information on that for y'all.
Thank you.
Is the lady going to be in your office or are y'all working still at home?
We are coming into the office some days and not other days, but we are happy to work with any commissioner to give them guidance on this and just let us know.
So the next slide deals with honoraria. I mean, these are gifts given, public appearance type gifts. The general rule is you may not accept an honorarium in exchange for services performed if you're performing those services on behalf of the Port Authority. You know, if you're asked to speak in one of your other capacities, this rule doesn't wouldn't apply, but if you've got questions about that, please reach out to us. However, you can accept travel, lodging, and meals in connection with the services that you may provide at, say, a conference, at a seminar, as long as you're actually giving a presentation and not just attending, for example. Nepotism, our rules with respect to nepotism are as follows. There's no hiring of any relatives of any port commission by the Port Authority. With respect to employees, employees are not supposed to be involved in the hiring of relatives. They're not supposed to be involved in any employment decisions relating to their relatives. And they're not supposed to trade. So you're not supposed to, you know, a manager in one group isn't supposed to say, I'll hire your relative if you hire mine, to another manager. There are some exceptions for a personal attendant. If anyone has questions about that, again, feel free to reach out. Outside employment is permitted for port employees in limited circumstances. All employees are expected to disclose outside employment in advance. No outside employment will be allowed if it would impair someone's independence with the Port Authority. Senior managers need executive director approval, and the executive director needs the Port Commission's approval if he wants to engage in outside employment. This next slide deals with what happens after you're a commissioner. Former commissioners and employees are not supposed to participate in any matters that you were involved with when you were a commissioner or an employee. The Port Commission has to approve certain contracts with companies that a former employee might go to for the 12 months after they leave. And then for the commissioners and the executive director, there's a 2 month period or 2 year period after your service with the Port Authority where you are not supposed to engage with in communications with the Port Authority with the intent to influence any Port Authority decisions. Misuse of public property here, you know, we're talking about port vehicles, those sorts of things. You're not supposed to use port property in violation of, you know, the any agreement that you have with the Port Authority, your contract of employment for employees, or the limited purpose that the piece of property was given to you. If you're traveling on behalf of the Port Authority, discounts, awards, coupons for travel, those sorts of things are not covered by this, so it's okay for you to hang on to those. You also should not try to obtain or use confidential Port Authority information to advantage yourself, someone close to you, or to try to harm or defraud another person. The policy, it's the policy of the Port Authority to promote an atmosphere of respect, equality, safety, and to prevent discrimination and harassment. The Port Authority has an equal opportunity and retaliation policy. The Port Authority has an unlawful harassment policy and a misconduct reporting policy. Won't get into the details of those here, but obviously all commissioners and all employees are expected to comply with those policies. And when it comes to reporting misconduct, commissioners and employees are asked to report any misconduct promptly, and then the Port Authority is going to investigate that fully and address things appropriately. Retaliation, of course, is prohibited. No one should be retaliating against anyone else for having reported misconduct. Penalties for violation of the Code of Ethics. In addition to the penalties that may be imposed by law. And you'll notice if you look at the Code of Ethics, there's a number of references to the penal code. So some violations could be criminal violations. Within the Port Authority, some of the penalties are for commissioners. You could be subject to official reprimand or a recommendation of removal from office by a majority of a quorum of the commission. For employees, you could be subject to reprimand, suspension, or dismissal from employment. And then contractors that take part in violations of the Code of Ethics could face contract termination and be barred from future Port Authority business. So that is it. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? Or employees, I guess, right?
I've got one. Can we use this? Is this a standard meeting that I can credit for my bar association? Did you get it approved?
I did not get CLE approval for that. I may need to look into that next year, because that actually might be a good idea for those attorneys to try to get the ethics credit, because those are always the hardest to come by.
I need my accounting too for the AICPA, right?
It's a great question, Roy.
Exactly.
Dave, you and I are the only ones left out.
we'll look into it.
Okay, I think it's a pretty a great presentation. Important stuff, obviously. I mean, you know, I know commissioners that, you know, you get paid the big bucks to do this, so let's just make sure we never, you know, have a foot fault on any of these issues. And I'll tell you that oftentimes, you know, like when I first started speaking, you know, at different events, I remember one where there were a number of park commissioners at the event, and there was a vendor who was sponsoring the event that actually made a pretty good local whiskey, and they brought bottles to the commissioners and with their names on them, and unfortunately we had to give them back or pay $120 or something. So
that's what we did.
That's what we did.
And then sometimes we get gifts, and obviously we just donate them. I mean, it's not polite, let's say, to refuse it, but we give it to the Port Authority and it becomes a donation to the Port Authority.
Yeah, there's no upside with the high pay that we get to ever accept anything like that, okay? Or doing it.
One last mention, we're working on a couple of updates to this Code of Ethics, and we'll be bringing that to the Governance Committee in the coming months, along with some of the other policy changes we've been working on, and we'll do that and then bring that to the Commission ultimately for action.
Yep, great. Okay, anything else on this meeting, commissioners? Any closing comments or questions? I know we're rolling right into, I think we're using the same WebEx to roll into the community relations meeting that Commissioner Corgi's going to lead, correct? Is that right?
I believe.
Well, correct. This was well perceived, well put together.
Okay, great. All right, so last thing on the Port Authority agenda is to remind you of the next meeting, which is on July the 20th, 2021. And so I will call for a motion to formally adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Motion. Second.
Any negative votes? Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. So.